This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast.
Welcome
to Utopia.
Hey, everybody. Welcome in. It is a Thursday edition. Today is Thursday as we record this of the Utopia Football Podcast. It is great to be with you. I am Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610. And we are a few days out from the combine here. We'll touch on some draft stuff for sure on this episode. This will be a quick one today. Just touch on some of the Texans news schedule prediction that I have. If you missed that on Payne and Pendergast, I'll give it to you again here on the pod. Some recap from some of the things that Seth and I talked about with Nick Caserio on our show on Wednesday this week. Nick joined us, and a new stadium. Hey, how about that? We could be seeing a new stadium at some point here in the, I won't say not too distant future. My guess is it'll be in the distant future. But that was a big topic this week, too, in the Chronicle. Jonathan Alexander, and I apologize, I forget who he collaborated with on that piece, but they had an exclusive for the Chronicle regarding a potential new stadium for the Texans. So we got a handful of things to get into here. A quick reminder that if you want to email, I'll be out in Florida next week. Seth and I will both be in Florida covering the Astros spring training. But I'm still going to be doing the podcast. So Astros are fair game next week as well. I mean, I'll probably be reporting on the podcast on some of this stuff I'm seeing in spring training, even though the focal point of this podcast is the Houston Texans. But if you do want to email me, I will be doing a mailbag episode next week, houmailbag@gmail.com. You can see it at the bottom of the screen right there. Hit me up with an email, and we'll mailbag it next week. We'll do two episodes next week, just like we're doing this week, because the combine, should mention that right off the top. Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans, their media times were distributed today to those of us in the media. We got a release announcing when they were going to be doing their combine press conferences. D'Amico will be meeting with the media on Tuesday at 12:15 Houston time. Caserio will be meeting with the media Wednesday, also at 12:15 Houston time. So that'll be deep dives from both of them on the draft. There hasn't really been much with the Texans in the offseason that I anticipate the national media asking them about. I'm sure there'll be some C.J. Stroud questions in there. I'm guessing maybe a Stephon Diggs question or two. But other than that, I would guess it's going to be mostly draft stuff for D'Amico and Nick at the combine next week. So circle those dates and times. I'm sure we'll be covering them heavy on Sports Radio 610 next week, the day after, at least on our show, the day after, Wednesday and Thursday. So D'Amico Tuesday, 12:15, Nick Caserio Wednesday at 12:15, out at the combine. So a few things here. As long as we're talking about Caserio, if you missed it, Nick joined me and Seth yesterday on Wednesday for about 45 minutes, his typical 45-minute hit with us that we do about probably about once a month with Nick. To me, the most significant things to come out of that conversation, I think there were three or four things. It was a good conversation. There were three or four actually really funny things that happened in the conversation. Nick was feeling it yesterday. He told a great Tom Brady story about Tom Brady having virtual reality suggested to him, put the goggles on and basically threw him on the ground about 5 seconds after trying it. Nick said that Roger Clemens had a big ass. He meant it as a compliment because he was talking about the sturdiness of athletes below the waist. But in a vacuum, which we, of course, did, we isolated that one quote and played it over and over and over again. We're part of the problem for sure. But Nick was really good yesterday. I think just purely from a football standpoint, the most important things that came out of it, and I'm gauging this off of reaction on social media. Shout out to Garrett with Houston Stressins, who once again goes above and beyond to post videos from our Caserio interviews on his Twitter feed, which is great. I totally love that. Extra promotion is good promotion. So Garrett, you know, Garrett knows that I appreciate him. But Stephon Diggs, we know that Monday came and went without a deal for Stephon Diggs, without a contract extension. And because of that, the $16 million of the $22 million that Diggs made this year that was shoved into future years hit the cap this year. So the Texans are carrying $16 million in Diggs money on the cap for 2025. You can afford to do that a little bit easier right now when you got C.J. Stroud still on his rookie deal. It's not ideal. However, the salary cap, it was just announced yesterday that the salary cap is going to be going up anywhere from 22 to like 26 million. So that's kind of, you know, like that, those dollars are, you know, you kind of get a mulligan from the NFL every year because the cap keeps going up by about 10 to 12%. So as it turns out, when we asked Nick about Diggs, I asked him, what can you tell us about the lead up to the Monday date? And now that we're post that Monday date, is bringing back Stephon Diggs a possibility? Not surprisingly, they're open to bringing Stephon Diggs back. Nick is open to almost anything that has potential to be good for the Houston Texans. And I think bringing Stephon Diggs back at the right price would be good for the Houston Texans. So he's absolutely open to that. He talked about how they loved having Steph in the building. Played well, obviously, but obviously brought a lot of leadership qualities. He was voted a captain of the team. So they would absolutely have him back. I think as far as the lead up to Monday, you know, where we were kind of watching it, I was watching it almost with like a countdown mentality of like, okay, got to get this deal done. As it turns out, they weren't, I don't even know that they talked about a new extension with Stephon Diggs leading up to Monday. It sounds like the plan all along had been to make his 4-year contract a 1-year deal, which they did last year when they acquired him. And then that 1-year deal, he was going to go to free agency. He was always going to go to free agency, it sounded like. Nick Caserio, I forget how he categorized it, but it was almost like a non-event, he said, on Monday. They've been planning for it. And that makes sense because there are other players that you saw around the league who had a contract voiding date this past week, like Stephon did. And some teams moved the date back to give them more time to negotiate an extension. I would think if the Texans had been having any conversations about extensions, they could have very easily moved that date back. So it sounds to me like free agency was going to be the plan all along for Diggs, injury or no injury. I think that's where it gets very interesting now. He tore the knee on October, 27th, I think it was. It was 4 days before the Jets game, which was on Halloween. So yeah, October 27th. So November 27th, December, January is 3 months. We're not even 4 months into his ACL recovery yet. So he's still got a lot of rehab to do. I'm guessing it's going to come out fine. The ACL, torn ACL, is not nearly the death sentence it was a couple of decades ago or whenever that was. Guys come back from torn ACLs all the time. Now, he is a 31-year-old, soon-to-be 32-year-old wide receiver who relies on quick, sudden change of direction. So that's a different animal than somebody in their early 20s coming back to play quarterback, let's say. Like Deshaun Watson, for example, who's come back from multiple ACL injuries and had played well for a while. The reason Deshaun is not playing well anymore, well, torn Achilles, but even when Deshaun was healthy and not playing well, it had nothing to do with his ACLs. To me, it had to do more with being in his own head. I think what gets interesting with Diggs, there's a lot of teams out there with a ton of cap space who could use wide receiver help. And there may be an opportunity here for them to get digs at what is a dollar amount that teams that have less cap space would be willing to pay because of the risk of the injury. Like, free agency starts in the middle of March. So Diggs won't even be 5 months into post-ACL era yet when free agency starts. And yet I could see a team like the Commanders, let's say, or the New England Patriots, who I know are at two very different ends of the spectrum right now on the, you know, say the NFL power rankings. The Patriots, I think, are still largely viewed as one of the worst teams in football. The Commanders were a very pleasant surprise. They were like the Texans of 2024. A lot of cap space, good young quarterback, got some nice pieces, and now they can get real aggressive. I could see one of those teams who have ample cap space. And when I'm talking about New England, they've got like over $100 million in cap space. Washington's third, I think they've got like $80 million in cap space. I could see them being willing to pay what a healthy Diggs would get on spec that his knee is going to be healthy again, that he's going to be the player he was for those eight games that he played for the Texans last year, which were good. They weren't top of the market good. Like, I think even if Diggs had gone on to have a healthy rest of the season where he played the same way he did in the first eight games, he would have wound up with around 100 catches, around 1,100 yards, six or seven touchdowns. I think that guy is probably maxing out at maybe like 23 or 24 million in free agency. Like, I don't think he's getting more than Nico Collins, although Nico's probably underpaid now at this point. So I think that'll be something to watch. When free agency hits, is will there be a team out there? I'm not going to say that money whips Diggs, that like goes after him hard. I think at this stage, he is more of a probably 1 or 2 year guy. But just see what the market does with the teams that have a ton of space, because the wide receiver market is not real deep free agency wise. You know, you've got T. Higgins at the top. He's going to get franchise tag. You've got Chris Godwin after that. He's hurt all the time, and he's coming off of an injury. Diggs, you got DeAndre Hopkins, who looked more washed to me than looking like somebody who's going to have a big impact anymore. Hollywood Brown, guys like that. So a healthy Diggs is up there. Even an injured Diggs right now is considered a top three or four free agent wide receiver. So if I had to guess, just based on the tone that Nick had in the interview with us about Diggs, I would guess he's not going to be back. There's 32 teams in the NFL. 30 of them on any given transaction operate with complete sanity. But then there's always one or two or three that get a little crazy. And I could see Diggs. I could see that happening with him, especially when the free agent wide receiver markets, like the healthy ones near the top there, start to dry out, I could see a team overpaying Diggs, but paying more than a team like the Texans would be willing to pay him. So Caserio talked about that. He talked about CJ's offseason. I asked him about CJ and how he was going about his offseason this year. It seems like he's trying to be a little bit more in the background now. CJ, you know, he didn't go to the Pro Bowl, even though he was invited. That's how we wound up with Drake May at the Pro Bowl. He wasn't on Radio Row. Didn't see him there all week. He played in Travis Scott's baseball game, but I don't think he left with Amber Rose this year. It looks like CJ is maybe a little more dialed in, or at least not doing as much stuff publicly. I haven't seen him do any podcasts or anything like that. By this time last year, he had done about 10 or 12 podcasts, it felt like, anywhere from reporters to buddies of his, Micah Parsons, whatever. Is that indicative of CJ going about how he's going about his business? And Nick pointed out, like, look, whether it's last year where he was very public, CJ, or whether it's this year where he's not been public really at all, CJ works hard. He puts in the time. He said they sat down with him like they do with all the players and give him two or three things to work on in the off season. So Seth and I were kind of left to speculate what those two or three things might be. Probably one big one is getting your head into a new playbook. You know, he's got a new OC now in Nick Caley. So that's a big one. Nick and the organization are very bullish on CJ right now. I know there's probably some of you out there that are disappointed, feel like he took a step back in year two. I don't think the team feels like he took a step back at all in year two. If you watch Derek Stingley's interview on the Pivot podcast, you know, and they brought up like the interview, Ryan Clark and then brought up CJ, you know, and his numbers going backwards. And Stingley acted like he'd never even bothered to look at CJ's stats. He's like, man, I don't know about the stats. All I know is that when we go out there every Sunday, CJ is a dude that fights his ass off. You know, like, he's a leader. So And I think that's how the organization views him. I think even in some of the games that didn't look great for CJ this past year and statistically weren't very good, I think there's a real understanding. Look, they fired the OC, you know what I mean? So there's one person who's clearly taking some or being pointed at and being handed some of the blame for this is Bobby Slowick. And I think there's a lot of blame to be spread around along the offensive line as well. Garrett at Houston Stressons has a really good piece up. If you go to his Twitter feed, there's a link to it that really lays out just how culpable or not culpable CJ was for the offense this year. Good read. Go find it. Go out of your way to find it if that interests you. And then I think the third thing I asked him about Derek Stingley Jr. and a contract extension, and it sounds like there are going to be some talks to take place. Will it happen? No. He said it's never linear. These things never just – there's no set way it comes together. We should point out Derek Stingley Jr., his agent is David Mulligetta, which the more and more we get detached from the Deshaun Watson situation, for those who don't know, Mulligetta was Deshaun's or is Deshaun's agent. He was the one who a lot of people felt was a driving force behind Deshaun wanting to get out of Houston. Casario's worked on multiple deals with Mulligetta since then. We haven't seen any Mulligetta clients agitate since then the way that Deshaun did. We should point out he was Jalen Ramsey's agent, or is Jalen Ramsey's agent as well. So that was another one that kind of agitated to get out of Jacksonville back in the day. But we're talking 4 or 5 years ago now. About 4 years ago when Deshaun made his initial trade request. I'm not real worried about Stingley. I'm not real worried about Stroud. You know, he's CJ's agent as well. Stingley seems to be taking the Nico Collins approach to this, which is not rocking the boat at all. He even mentioned Nico, Stingley did, when he was asked about his contractual situation on the Pivot podcast, and said that he's watching kind of how Nico Collins went about his business to get a bag last year. You know, when Nico got his extension last year, Nico came in the building, was working out every day. Stingley reportedly, that's him. He spends his offseason here in Houston. He's in the building all the time. And so if he's taking his cues from Nico Collins, I think that's good. And Nico Collins has Drew Rosenhaus as his agent. So it's not like he's got some patsy as an agent either. So Stingley, it sounds like there's going to be talks that take place. Does it arrive at a contract? We'll see. The difference with Stingley and Nico is that Nico is not the best in the league at his position. He's really good, but not the best in his league, in the league. Stingley, you could argue, is the best corner in the league. Now, similar to Nico, though, this is, you know, like...
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Kind of, this is Stingley's first really healthy year. Like Nico in 2023, I think he missed a couple of games in 2023, but way more healthy than he'd been his first 2 years in the league. Stingley, very banged up his first 2 years in the league, missed a lot of games, and now played all 17 games and played in the playoffs and was better as the season went on. By the end of the year, he was the best cornerback in football. So that those are the three, to me, the three things that here in a podcast forum like this, I think are most intriguing. Diggs, CJ, Stingley. All right, let's get to a couple other things. I think that the Texans are going to play in Brazil to open the season. I made that prediction today on Payne and Pendergast. I'll make it here for you, the Utopia listener. Shout out to anybody who's both of those things, listener to the radio show and listener to this podcast, or viewer of both on YouTube. But I think the Texans are going to play in Brazil to open the season. Here's why. The Los Angeles Chargers, it was announced yesterday, are going to be hosting the Sao Paulo, Brazil week one game. This will be the second one. The inaugural one was last year in week one. Remember, it was a Friday night game between the Eagles and the Packers. And I think the Eagles won that game. But played in Sao Paulo, Brazil. So they're going back there this year. There's more international games now. They're adding more and more. Eventually, they said they'd like to play, I think, 8 per year. Eventually, I think they'd like to get to where every team goes international one weekend, probably. But the NFL's done a nice job, I think, of ramping up this international stuff. They're going to have a few games in London again. Jacksonville will be going there. They're going to be playing in Dublin, Ireland. The Steelers are going to be hosting that game. I believe the Colts are hosting a game in Berlin, Germany. This is relevant for what I'm about to lay out here as far as my prediction of the Texans playing the Chargers in week one. And then they're going to Melbourne. I think that's in 2026. So they're starting to pick and choose a whole lot of places. We know they've gone to Mexico a couple of times. The Texans went there back in 2016. The last time the Texans traveled internationally was in 2019 when they traveled to London to face the Jacksonville Jaguars. Here's why I think they're going to play in Brazil. The Chargers' home opponents this year, they have 9 home games, like every AFC team does. They have 9 home games. Well, now one of those home games is going to be staged in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Three of their 9 opponents that they have on their home slate, the Chargers, are their divisional rivals: Kansas City, Las Vegas, and Denver. I don't think they're going to send a divisional game to Brazil. I think the divisional games are too important to be robbing a team of a home game, even though the Chargers have a dog shit home field advantage at SoFi Stadium. They're a second-class citizen in their own building there behind the Rams. But I think just the optics, I don't think they're going to take a home game away from a division that's a very competitive division. That division had 3 playoff teams last year with the Chiefs and the Chargers and the Broncos. So I think you can cross off the Broncos, Chiefs, and Raiders as a logical opponent for the Chargers in Sao Paulo, Brazil. That leaves 6 remaining opponents. One of them is Philadelphia. They're already spoken for in week one. They'll be playing the night before at home in that spot where the Super Bowl champ hosts the season opener. Okay, so cross off Philadelphia. The Colts are a home opponent for the Chargers. They're already going overseas to Berlin. They're not going to send them to Brazil and Berlin in the same year. Cross off the Colts. The Steelers are hosting a game in Dublin. Same thing applies. They're not going to send a team to 2 divergent places. I know the Jags played 2 London games last year. They went over there on 1 trip to play London games. One is a home, one is an away on either side of that week. So that's... I know some of you may come back with that. Hey, the Jags played 2 international games. It was in the same city in the same week. They're not going to send teams traveling across all these time zones twice in 1 year. I feel confident in that. So cross the Steelers and the Colts off, and again, cross the Eagles off. You're left with 3 teams after that: Washington, Minnesota, and the Texans. Washington, I think, there's a very good chance that they're the Eagles' opponent in week one, if I had to guess. On that Thursday night game to open the season. That would be a rematch of the NFC title game. They will do division games because that's actually being played in an NFL stadium. They will do a division game on a Thursday night to open the season like that. Nobody's getting an unfair advantage or anything. And that's probably the sexiest matchup on the Eagles' schedule. They do not play the Chiefs this year, the Eagles, so there's no Super Bowl rematch that we can do. So the next best thing is a rematch of the NFC title game. So that's why I predict that Washington will be already spoken for in week one. That leaves Minnesota and the Texans. And now it just comes down to which is the sexier, sizzlier matchup. And with all due respect to the 14-3 Vikings, you are boring. You're a boring team that's either going to have Sam Darnold or J.J. McCarthy at quarterback. My guess is the Brazilian population is way bigger in Houston than it is in Minnesota. Houston has one of the bigger Brazilian populations of big cities here in the United States. A ton of them are probably NFL fans and maybe even Texan fans as well. I think that's a reason why I would take, because that's what I think it's going to come down to, Vikings or Texans, because for all the reasons I said about those other teams. I think C.J. Stroud is a much easier face to put on the marquee poster against Justin Herbert. The two teams played each other in the postseason last year, so there's a revenge angle as well. And the Texans right now are scheduled to go to SoFi Stadium twice this season, once to play the Chargers, once to play the Rams. Just a real weird scheduling quirk where they're catching the NFC West and the AFC West in the same season, and they're scheduled to go on the road to both of those places. I could see, not as the main reason, but as a sub-justification for sending the Texans there, being that, okay, well, the Texans, they have a fan base that travels pretty well. We'd rather let them travel to two different places than traveling to the same place, L.A., twice in the same year. So I think there's a great chance that I would bet a lot of money that the Texans are going to be the Chargers' opponent in Brazil. Maybe I'm wrong. But I think I put a good case together. Did I not? You know, tell me. Email me, houmailbag@gmail.com, if you want to email me. All right, so Brazil. All right, last thing here. We'll get into more draft talk and mock draft and things like that next week when the combine gets popping and we hear from D'Amico and Nick. But the new stadium topic that the Houston Chronicle had this week is very interesting to me. Houston is a very unique city when it comes to the football stadium arrangement, because I don't think there's another NFL team in the league. I don't think there's another team in the league who has a similar stadium situation where they share it with such a prominent entity like the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. I think if I had to guess, I think all the other NFL owners, you know, they may have a soccer team that plays there or something. A lot of times they own that too, you know, like the Crafts with the soccer team up in New England. They've got tenants of their stadium, but they don't partner with somebody like the Rodeo. So this is one of those things that if it's going to be a county-funded thing, it's got to involve the Rodeo and probably the Sports Authority and Harris County. And there's a lot there are a lot of tentacles to this thing. The upkeep, I saw where NRG Stadium is rated not so great right now in terms of just the overall condition of the stadium. It's hard to believe the stadium is almost 25 years old. That's kind of crazy. It's gone by very, very quickly. But the Texans have an excellent deal, man. That Chronicle article really laid out well. They essentially don't really pay to play at NRG Stadium. When you factor in all the tax rebates that they get, kind of covers their nut for the lease. The Rodeo pays for a lot of the maintenance on NRG Stadium. They've got a pretty good deal. The problem is that the stadium, for what consumers want nowadays in a stadium, it is somewhat antiquated. Whereas in 2000 or 1999, you know, early 2000s, retractable roofs that aren't used very much, retractable roofs and like the slide-in turf were the big things. The convenience of the convenience of the overall game day atmosphere, as far as like sitting in your seat, the convenience of, you know, removing the turf and things like that because you got other events in there. Those were key hot buttons. They're not anymore. Now they've got field turf in there that's pretty easy, and they never open the damn roof or rarely open it. Now people want a more comfortable experience because, quite honestly, and they want a more comfortable experience both in their seats. The rich people want their luxury suites to be luxurious, and I think there is a big part with fans that want wider concourse areas, easier to get around in the stadium, easier to get in and out of the stadium. You're not walking down a jillion ramps to get out, and more places to congregate inside the stadium that have sort of a tailgate party atmosphere. You look at a lot of these new stadiums and they're droning around inside or above the stadium, and you see there's a lot of places where people are congregating like it's Mardi Gras, like it's a big party. There are a few bars and club level areas in NRG Stadium, but nothing like they had at SoFi and other places like that. Allegiant Stadium in Vegas is amazing. So the thing, to me, the thing that the Texans are competing with when it comes to the stadium is the viewing experience inside people's houses. You know what I mean? I'm an example of that right there. It's pretty luxurious for me to sit down on that there couch behind me, or that recliner, and watch on those three TVs right there. I have great audio, great video, great sound, and very, very inexpensive beer. So that's what's kind of at stake here. That's what the big touch points are. I don't think it's a coincidence that the Texans went and found a new team president at this time. when the stadium is going to be a hot button issue. Mike Tolman, who's got extensive background in stadium operations and has partnered with many, many professional teams, including the Cowboys, on stadium management, marketing, things like that. That's his area of expertise. Greg Grissom was an amazing business person, you know, like the business side, the sales, sponsorships, the actual numbers, things like that. Tolman seems to be more of a big picture stadium guy, working with all the different entities you're going to have to work with to get this thing done. It's going to be fascinating to really watch play out. And at the core of all this is the fact that as fans, I think fans are, it boils down to, are you winning enough? You know, and to this point, I think in a lot of people's eyes, the Texans have not won nearly enough to be asking for money from taxpayers for a new stadium. Now, they haven't done it yet. They're only looking into it right now. So they haven't asked yet. So we should make that clear. But we can kind of see which way the wind's blowing on all this. So it's going to be fascinating to watch. I hope it doesn't become something that kind of hangs over the team. I think my guess is the team, the coaching staff, everybody else, they're going to be focused just fine on playing football. How big a news item this becomes over the next few years remains to be seen. But I don't even know what to predict as a final outcome. You know, until the Texans have a public stance on a new stadium. The only public stance they've taken is a statement from my friend Omar Majoub, who runs media relations for the Texans. He put out a statement essentially saying, we're all working together to renovate NRG Stadium right now. So they're not saying anything publicly, demanding anything publicly, saying anything publicly about a new stadium. But that's going to be a tough nut to crack, man, for taxpayers. The county's still paying down the debt on the existing stadium. And where do you put it? You know, is this finally the end of the Astrodome where you knock that thing over, put it there? So there's a lot that goes into it. That this is a topic is just fascinating to me. So we'll see where that goes. All right. I am done. I want to thank Jared Rowland, my producer, for getting the podcast out to all of you. Again, a reminder, subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. Appreciate you when you do that. HOUmailbag@gmail.com is where you can hit me with the email on any of the stuff we've talked about. Draft is a big thing. Free agency is a big thing. You want to hit me up about the new stadium or anything else. Or if you heard anything in the Caserio interview that you like that you want to follow up on, the mailbag is a great way to do that. Listen 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. weekdays to Payne and Pendergast, especially next week. We'll be in West Palm Beach, but we will have podcast episodes. But we'll be in West Palm Beach, Seth and I will, covering the Astros, covering spring training down there in West Palm Beach. I should thank as well for sending us down there for a little spring ball. Exclusive Furniture and Academy Sports and Outdoors for sending us there. Very generously, we appreciate that. All of our sponsors who send us these places, we couldn't do it without you. So thank you very much for that. All right, I'm done. I am out of time. Actually, I got a lot of time, but I want to go do something else. I love all you guys. I appreciate you listening and tuning in. We will see you for a mailbag episode next week. Until then, have a great weekend. Be kind to one another. Take care.